How it will go down. Agenda 2030. The following story is based on real events. If you think this can't happen where you live, you're wrong. It's already happening. Imagine the perfect young American family. Bob is a 30-year-old veterinarian, and his wife Brenda is a 27-year-old stay-at-home mother. They have a 4-year-old daughter everyone calls Bibi, a black lab called Shadow, and an orange tabby named Mr. Whiskers. They live in a small farmhouse a 2-hour drive outside the city that Bob had inherited from his grandfather. There was a small town, Cedar Valley, only 20-minute drive away with a dozen and a half small shops lining the 2 blocks of Main Street. Bob made a living tending to the livestock of the local farmers and the pets of the townsfolk. Brenda stayed at home to look after Bibi and knitted scarves and hats that she sold at the local flea market once a month for a little extra spending money. People in the area were all struggling financially. The carbon tax went up again, and everything from propane and hydro to food and animal feed was becoming very expensive. No one turned their lights on at night anymore, and even the stores on Main Street closed at sunset. Bob was feeling a little anxious. His income was dropping and prices rising. One day he drove through the small residential area, snuggled in the bend of the river just off Main Street. There he saw many for sale signs on the trim little lawns behind the white picket fences. Bob stopped off at the small diner on Main Street and was shocked to see how few people there were. It was lunchtime and the place should have been packed. Bob sat at the counter and ordered a soup and sandwich from Maureen, the waitress. She wasn't very busy, and Bob asked her, "Where is everybody? Was there some holiday?" Maureen laughed and told him it's been slow for months now. Then she leaned in close and in a low voice told Bob that she doesn't think the cafe will be around that much longer. Bob asked, "Where are all the people?" And again leaning in close, Maureen told him that everyone she knew had sold out and bought a condo in the big city. They just couldn't survive out in the country anymore. Then the wind turbines came. One of the local farmers who had been struggling financially because the cost of feed went through the roof due to the new carbon tax agreed to rent a corner of his property to an energy company to install a wind turbine. Within a couple of months, the farmer's livestock mysteriously sickened and died. With no other choices available, the farmer rented out his acreage to the energy company to build a wind farm, and then he and his ailing wife moved to the city. Soon, the neighboring farmers noticed their animals becoming sick with strange illnesses. Bob did his best to diagnose and find treatment for the cattle and chickens afflicted, but he had never seen anything like it. Most of the farmers decided it was better to have the animals put down than to watch them suffer. Bob and Brenda were bird watchers, and Bob especially liked to watch the big red-tailed hawks as they soared majestically over the farm fields and forests. But recently, he didn't see any, which was strange because you could usually see 2 or 3 every day. A couple of days later, Bob was over at Farmer Brown's helping to birth a calf, and during the small talk, Bob asked if he'd seen any hawks around. Farmer Brown said yes, and he could show Bob where they are. They walked a half mile to where Farmer Brown's property bordered the wind farm. There, spread over the field, were dozens of dead birds, mostly hawks, falcons, and owls, and even an eagle. All had been cut in half, decapitated, or had a wing chopped off. "These things are death machines," said Farmer Brown. "None of my cattle will come anywhere near them, and even my dog begins to whimper if I walk him near one." It was then that Bob began to have a feeling of impending doom that was always there in the back of his mind. Then the community was hit with a death blow. New climate apocalypse laws took effect, making it illegal to heat your home with oil, propane, or even wood in the fireplace. That left only electrical heating, and the electrical bill, already expensive, would double. With the loss of livestock, the outrageous energy bills, and winter coming, the farmers couldn't make it anymore. Each one either rented out their properties for wind farms or sold the farm and moved to the city. Cedar Valley became a ghost town. Without the farming industry, 90% of the small businesses in town closed down, and the storefronts were boarded up with for rent signs in the windows. But no one was going to rent there ever again. Bob soon had no more work, and not even Brenda's knitting could bring in money since the flea market closed months ago. They had no choice but to sell the house and move to the city. The house sold for a fraction of what it was worth 10 years ago. A large Wall Street conglomerate bought most of the farms and houses for pennies on the dollar. The money from the sale of the house was just enough to put a deposit on a one-bedroom condominium on the 57th floor of a glass and steel building in the high-density city core. They sold their truck, too, because under the new climate apocalypse laws, fossil fuel vehicles were not allowed in the city. They also had to leave behind their dog Shadow. The condominium complex they were moving to didn't allow animals heavier than 15 pounds, and Shadow was a big old boy. Thankfully, Bob heard that the widow Robinson in town was taking in all the animals people had to leave behind. She was secure because she had inherited a fortune, and she had a huge yard and a heated shed where the animals could stay. She already had 7 cats and 6 dogs. It broke Bob's heart to say goodbye to Shadow. There is a special bond between a man and his dog. But at least he'll be fed and well looked after, and he would have lots of new friends to play with. Sitting in the back of the electric bus, taking them to the city, Bob took hold of Brenda's hand, and they both wrapped their arms around Bibi, who sat between them. Bob said everything will be just fine, and they were all going on a big adventure. But Bibi already missed Shadow, and the farmhouse, and the trees. Bob told her they still have Mr. Whiskers, and there will be even more fun things to do in the city. Brenda looked at Bob, and they both knew this was not true, but they wanted to be positive, for Bibi's sake. As the bus turned a curve, Bob and Brenda looked out the window to take one last look at the farmhouse they spent so many happy years in. Once they were moved into their new condo, Bob and Brenda had to attend an orientation seminar to explain how the condominium corporation was integrated with the city's smart city grid. First, all residents needed to get a microchip implanted in the forearm. This would allow them to enter the building, pay for groceries, and save the planet. Every business and government service used a monetary system called carbon credits. Salaries were deposited directly into a carbon credit account. Your account balance had to maintain a certain level in order to access certain services. And credits could be added or deducted by the government, Central Planning and Happiness Equality Bureau. Until you reached 1,000 carbon credit rating, you could only shop in the stores that occupy the first 2 floors of the condominium. If you associated with people who had a carbon credit score below 300, you could be penalized. To see a person's carbon credit rating, just take out your smartphone and point it at the person. That person's rating will immediately appear on your screen. All activities were aimed at reducing the carbon footprint in order to delay the climate apocalypse and save the children. The family experienced strange sensations since entering the city. Brenda would get anxiety attacks, something she never experienced before. Bibi seemed to cry a lot, probably because she missed her dog. Bob was a night owl and could function fine on only 5 hours sleep, and he'd like to stay up late and read. But ever since moving to the city, he and Brenda both felt an overwhelming sleepiness at 9 p.m. every night, so that they barely had the strength to tuck in Bibi, who was already asleep, before crawling into bed and dropping off. Then, at 5 a.m., they would all wake up at exactly the same time. Despite being a farm girl, Brenda liked to sleep in to 6, but now she was up at 5 o'clock too. A couple of times Bob would wake up in the middle of the night and hear a voice directly in his head urging him to kill himself, that life is not worth living, and that his existence was killing the planet and causing climate apocalypse. Bob attributed the voice to a dream, just replaying the daily newscasts that endlessly repeated the same message from thousands of plasma screens throughout the city. Antidepressants and amphetamine tablets were available without prescription at the checkout counter at the grocery store. Bob tried to find work, but there was not much demand for veterinarians in the city, and there was already a pet clinic on every other block attending to the millions of Shih Tzus, toy poodles, and cats that were always sick. Because of his additional degree in biology, Bob was offered the only job that would take him, processing the aborted fetuses from the nearby abortion factory for a pharmaceutical company. Bob's new job didn't pay enough to cover all the expenses, and so Brenda got a job as a cleaning lady in a senior center 10 blocks away. Because no one owned a car and public transportation was too expensive, Brenda would walk the 10 blocks to work. The route would take her through 3 blocks of the city known as the Equality Friendship Zone. Twice she was robbed, and once she was almost raped. Brenda was a tough country girl, having grown up on the farm, and the potential rapist completely underestimated her and was taken off guard by a swift kick to the balls and a follow-up slap to his ear, which ruptured his eardrum. Brenda never reported the crimes to the police since they wouldn't do anything anyway, and it would put her in danger of being charged with hate thought if she were to give an accurate description of the suspects. She never told Bob. There was nothing he could do, and the revelation would cause him to explode in helpless, impotent rage. While Bob and Brenda were at work, Bibi was sent to a government daycare and love center. Shortly thereafter, Bibi's personality changed. She was no longer the affectionate and curious child she used to be, but now was withdrawn and looked frightened. She had bruises on her arms and legs, but Bibi was too frightened to say how she got them. Every morning, she begged her parents not to send her to daycare love, but there was nothing else they could do. They had to go to work, and because of the new child safety and love laws, only government-licensed child lovers could look after her. What Bob and Brenda didn't know was that the government-mandated affirmative equality hires would slap Bibi and pull her hair and tell her she was ugly and stupid. That night, Brenda was awakened by the sounds of 2 loud knocks on the balcony window. Grabbing a flashlight, she woke Bob up to go take a look for what caused the noise. There was a couple of drops of blood on the balcony door, and laying on the floor were 2 dead chickadees. They had flown into the window and broken their necks. The next day, on her walk to work, Brenda noticed an unusual number of dead birds on the sidewalk. A few days later, Mr. Whiskers started behaving strangely. He avoided contact with Bibi, which was unusual because they were best friends, and Mr. Whiskers could never resist a belly rub from the little girl. Bob examined the cat, and he could feel numerous tumors beneath the skin. Probably a tumor had developed in the poor animal's brain, and this was the cause of the bizarre behavior and seizures. A week later, Mr. Whiskers was found in a contorted position under the couch. He had died during one of his seizures. They kept the tragic news from Bibi and told her that Mr. Whiskers had gone to visit Shadow, and he would be back soon. The new climate apocalypse regulations meant that each household could only receive 3 hours of electricity every day and 10 minutes of hot water. This would take place between 1 and 3 p.m., while Bob and Brenda were at work. That meant cold showers, and Brenda would have to heat up the food on an alcohol stove Bob had made from some aluminum cans. They would alternate days when they could eat hot food because Bob and Brenda's liquor allowance, the vodka used to run the stove, was not enough to heat their food every day. The elevators would only run for 2 hours a day, and by the time Brenda got home, after working a 12-hour shift and running as fast as she could through the Equality and Friendship Zone, she would then be faced with climbing the 57 flights of stairs to her apartment. One day, exhausted, she stopped on the 45th floor and cursed out loud, "God damn this city!" The light bulbs in the stairwell recorded this, and an incident report was sent to the Bureau of Hate Thought Crime. 5 seconds later, Brenda's smartphone beeped, and a message alerted her that her credit carbon score had dropped by 10 points. Brenda was furious and yelled at the phone, "Screw you, you bastards!" 5 seconds later, the phone beeped to announce that her score was deducted another 10 points. But there were no bastards sending her the texts. There were no humans involved anywhere in the system. Everything was run through AI. Millions of algorithms processed trillions of megabytes into behavior and language patterns based on the data mined by billions of social media users to instantly recognize hate thought crime and automatically issue a fine. One day while Bob was at work, there came a tray down the conveyor belt upon which lay a fetus that was still alive. Bob's job was to dissect the fetuses and extract the usable parts, the lungs, the liver, the kidneys, and the stem cells. Bob called his supervisor and told him he's a Christian and he can't kill a baby. Jim said it was okay, that he understood. He would take the tray back to the clinic where technicians will kill it. Jim didn't report Bob, but the whole interaction was caught on surveillance camera, and an incident report was sent to the Bureau of Hate Thought Crime. After work, Bob tried to board the electric train to his home, but when he scanned his microchip, an alarm went off. A large plasma screen flashed a message that he had committed hate thought crime, and Bob's carbon credit rating was too low to allow him to use public transportation. Jim had also been deducted 100 points for not reporting Bob. It took Bob almost 3 hours to walk home. The next day, when Brenda went to the store to buy their daily food allowance, her chip was denied. Street surveillance cameras with facial recognition had caught her crossing the street before the light had turned green. In addition, they had opened the fridge more than the maximum allowed 4 times a day. Under the new climate apocalypse laws, citizens weren't allowed to open their fridges more than 4 times a day. Once for breakfast, once for lunch, once for dinner, and once before bed to put away the leftovers. Brenda's carbon credit had dropped by another 100 points. She tried to borrow credits from Bob's credit score, but his credit rating didn't allow him to buy food for 2 weeks. When Bob heard that they wouldn't even be able to feed Bibi for a week, he lost it. He began cursing the government and the whole insane system out loud. What Bob didn't know was that the TV was watching, the thermostat was watching, the electrical outlets were watching, and the fridge was watching. 2 hours later, police arrived, along with Child Protection and Love Services. They announced that Bob was charged with another hate thought crime and that their combined carbon credit rating was too low to permit them to raise their child, and that Bibi would be taken into protective custody. Bob and Brenda died without ever finding out what really happened to their daughter. All their attempts to find out where she were met with the statement that it was classified and in the best interests of the child that the parents have no contact with her. What Bob and Brenda didn't know was that Bibi was trafficked to a government-run pedophile operation where she was repeatedly raped by the city's most upstanding party members. She was eventually tortured to death and her adrenochrome harvested for sale to the elites that could afford it. A month later, they received a message from Child Protection and Love Services that Bibi had passed away due to a measles outbreak. That month, Brenda got ovarian cancer. She had accidentally drank some of the tea they served at the seniors' center. Their carbon credit rating was not high enough to qualify for medical treatment. The best they could get was a prescription for OxyContin. The cancer was unusually aggressive and rapidly metastasized throughout her body. Over the next 2 weeks, Bob tried his best to care for his delirious and dying wife until she breathed her last while he held her in his arms and whispered to her that he loved her. Bob was alone now. He refused to allow the government morgue to harvest Brenda's corneas, and he was penalized another 50 points for hate thought crime. He was also fired from his job. His carbon credit rating had dropped so low, he was no longer allowed to work. The condominium sent police to evict Bob the next day. They banged on his door as he stood on the balcony, drinking the last of his vodka ration and looking down the 57 stories to the city below. Just as the police burst down the door, Bob leaned over the balcony rail so far that he dropped away out of sight. As he fell through the air to his death, Bob softly spoke aloud, "I'm so sorry." And everyone listening should be sorry too if you didn't fight every day to prevent this scenario. This is not a fictional story. This is reality closing in on us now. Small towns throughout the country are already ghost towns. Wind farms are already a blight across the landscape. China already has a social credit system. Our cities are festooned with cameras and facial recognition software. 5G is being rolled out so fast, it's as if life depended on it, and studies and research on its toxic effects are well documented. Environmental laws have already been written to regulate and restrict every tiny detail of your life. Abortion clinics already make a huge profit by selling fetus parts for pharmaceuticals. Government pedophile operations have been proven to exist by thousands of witnesses and whistleblowers. This is all happening now. And if you aren't doing everything you can to resist this abomination, then you are a traitor. A traitor to your country, a traitor to your family, a traitor to humanity, and a traitor to God. For God's sake, do something.